Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is Cindy. I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram for Friday, September 23rd. MDC invests across Midland. Corporation incentivizes job creation and searches for new companies, by Ben Schaefer. The Midland Development Corps has invested more than $80 million in infrastructure and its assets in business parks and downtown Midland, according to Executive Director Sarah Harris. Harris keynoted an MDC seminar Thursday at the Midland Chamber of Commerce to detail how the MDC attracts and invests in new businesses as well as creates jobs Thursday morning. During her presentation, Harris showed a graph detailing the MDC's investments during the past decade. It included $51,168,826 that has gone toward infrastructure, roads, utilities, etc., since 2002. She also said the MDC has invested $29,157,680 in its assets and business parks across Midland and in the downtown area. Harris also told the audience of chamber members and local business leaders about ways to establish and expand businesses in the area, assist others in doing so, and the MDC's role in all of it. MDC's primary jobs. Harris started the presentation by defining the MDC's goals as a Type A development corporation funded by a quarter-cent increase in the sales tax inside the city. The MDC, she said, is devoted to purchasing and developing land and facilities, funding municipal infrastructure for new and expanded businesses, and funding aviation facilities and rail switching facilities. It also incentivizes job creation in the area and wants to fund training for primary jobs through universities and colleges. In short, how I like to explain a primary job is any job that is going to bring funds into a community from outside, or a job that produces something within a community that is going to be sold outside of the community, Harris said. These primary jobs that the MDC is authorized to incentivize or to create or provide training for include crop and animal production, computer system design, transportation and warehousing, scientific research and development, as well as 14 others. These are the jobs we're looking for, and these are our bread and butter projects that we're looking for when we bring in new companies to Midland, Harris said. Hunt for new companies. Harris commented on how the MDC is seeking new companies to add to Midland. One of our main sources is from the Office of the Governor, Harris said. They send out 2 to 3 projects every week to communities in Texas and businesses that are looking to expand and relocate. She added that these reports typically include a site criteria list for real estate purposes and workforce requirements. We will respond to those, send them back to the site selector, and then start that dialogue, Harris said. Usually then they'll come to the community, show them around town, and then either Midland is selected as the final community or we get pulled from the list. Harris spoke briefly about tax abatements, specifically Chapter 380, 381, and 313 agreements, before detailing the Texas Enterprise Fund, a financial incentive for businesses choosing between expansion to the Texas and other states. She then discussed how the MDC deploys its funds. The corporation focuses on direct incentives to new and expanding businesses for capital investment and job creation, infrastructure funding, agreements with the City of Midland and Texas Department of Transportation to accelerate new and improved road, sewer, and water. We've done a lot of interlocal agreements with institutes of higher education to bring new training programs to Midland. We have assets that we purchase, so the MDC owns 2 business parks, one on I-20 and one on 191, and then MDC also owns properties downtown, Harris added. Small business crucial. Harris stressed the importance of small businesses to Midland and claimed the MDC assists startups and entrepreneurs. Harris explained how the MDC supports an entrepreneurial culture in Midland. What we've been working to do over the past couple years is create a nexus of resources for small businesses and entrepreneurs, she said. Sometimes these small businesses go on to become larger businesses and are Midland landmarks, she remarked. She explained the 1 million Lion Club Cups initiative, an opportunity for new business owners to tell their story and meet investors and bankers, much like the television show Shark Tank. What it is an opportunity for small businesses and entrepreneurs to meet with one another and with potential funders in a welcoming and collaborative environment that is set up every month at a different location around town, she said. Aerospace in Midland is happening. The MDC's pursuit of the aerospace sector business is a major priority, Harris said. It is a tremendously fast-growing cluster, $5 billion in private investment for aerospace last year, Harris said. That's not NASA, that's Roscosmos, that's just got private dollars. Harris explained the city of Midland has a spaceport license for horizontal launching, while vertical launches must occur over the ocean or in drastically unpopulated areas and aren't possible in Midland. Still, the vision for the spaceport at Midland International is that spacecrafts will utilize the runways. The spaceport tenants are aerospace companies in Midland that Harris profiled, AST, Spacemobile, and Kepler Aerospace. About AST, Spacemobile, which manufactures satellites, Harris said, they're in the process of manufacturing a satellite array for telecommunications. What they will provide is internet and cellular complete access anywhere on the planet through your phone you have now through your current cell phone provider. Kepler Aerospace is the second Midland company which looks to upgrade aviation technology and create satellite delivery systems. The MDC also is currently working on projects downtown at the Texas Tech Health Sciences Center Child and Adolescent Psychiatry Program, the UTPB Incubator and Makerspace Program, and quality of life initiatives like the Hispanic Cultural Center and the Hogan Park redevelopment, and more. A&M, average Midland home tops $390,000. Expert, homes needing work, expensive upkeep, not selling nearly as fast. By Stuart Doreen. The average price of a house in Midland County topped $390,000 in August, according to the Texas A&M Real Estate Center. The center reported a new records for average price, $390,299, and median price, $344,600, for a home sold inside Midland County during the month of August. The prices were increases of more than $40,000 and $18,000, respectively, compared to July. Homes that are selling are typically newer homes or already renovated to a high standard, said Janine Pruitt, Reader's Choice Gold Award winner for residential real estate. The buyers I am currently working with are factoring in the expense of needed, wanted updates, the energy cost to maintain the home's monthly bills, and the frustration factor of having to find and wait on contractors that may or may not show up. Simply put, the ones that need work or seem to be perceived as having expensive upkeep are not selling nearly as fast. In terms of dollar volume, the Real Estate Center also showed a 102.648 million dollar month in Midland County, the fifth in the last 6 months. Also notable was that many of Midland's streaks related to home sales continued in August. The average price for a home sold in Midland County has topped $300,000 for 48 straight months, 4 full years, a streak that goes back to September 2018. Also, August was the 15th straight month that the median price for a home sold topped $300,000. The median price for a home sold also reached or surpassed $320,000 for the sixth straight month, also a first. The number of homes sold was also comparable to August 2017 to 21, according to the Real Estate Center, showing that buyers found a way around higher interest rates even as prices weren't impacted by the increasing number of homes on the market, 675, the most since November. The Midland market also has proved to be more resilient than markets in Dallas, Austin, Fort Worth, and Houston. The counties where those respective cities reside showed decreases in both average and median prices from July to August. Pfluger seeks to remove methane fee from Inflation Reduction Act. Congressman, it will cost U.S. consumers as much as $65 billion a year with minimal impact on greenhouse gas emissions. By Mella McEwen. Included in the Inflation Reduction Act signed into law last month is a methane charge applied to petroleum and natural gas facilities already subject to greenhouse gas emission reporting under Environmental Protection Agency reporting regulations. The charge applies to applicable facilities, including onshore petroleum and gas production, gathering and boosting natural gas processing, transmission, compression, and transmission pipelines. It would be applied to those facilities reporting more than 25,000 metric tons of carbon dioxide equivalent per year. The Act requires the EPA revise its Subpart W reporting regulation within 2 years to ensure reported emissions are based on empirical data and accurately reflect the total methane emissions and waste emissions. Fees begin at $900 per metric ton beginning in 2024 and rising to $1,500 at the beginning of 2026. In response, Representative August Pfluger, the San Angelo Republican who represents District 2 that includes Midland and Odessa, introduced the Protecting the Permian Basin Act that would repeal the fee. This is the first time the federal government has imposed on a tax on these types of emissions, he told the MRT. Pfluger said that after consulting think tanks, economists, and others, it was determined the fee would cost U.S. consumers, individuals, and businesses as much as $65 billion in a year with minimal impact on greenhouse gas emissions. The emissions reductions, he added, would be much lower than what industry is already doing privately. It would be particularly harmful to low-income families as well as small businesses, he said. And the timing could not be worse, he said, with inflation at 40-year highs and energy prices surging. He introduced the act after telling Republican leadership he wanted to offer an alternative to the fee. While it was supported by Republicans, Pfluger decried the fact 219 Democrats blocked it from consideration. I want to put Democrats on the record to see if they supported American families and wanted to be on the path of inflation reduction, he said of putting the legislation to a vote. Instead, he said they continued to back the IRA plan. When he brings his colleagues from the U.S. House to the Permian Basin to visit drilling sites, frack sites, completion sites, and pipelines, he said they can see how the Permian Basin is leading the world in reducing emissions. The methane fee is an attack on something we're doing right that the Paris Accords could never get to, Pfluger said. An answer like Ike Hajina-Zarian, Texas Democratic Party spokesperson, told the MRT by email. As our lieutenant governor nominee Mike Collier says, the Texas GOP loves to offer a false choice. But the truth is that the choice is not between pump jacks and wind turbines. The choice is between Texas remaining the energy capital of the world or not. Regardless of what source of energy we're talking about, we have to make sure we're producing it in a way that's being good stewards of the land, so we have a beautiful state to leave future generations of Texans while creating thousands of good-paying jobs. Instead of continuing to promulgate lies, Congressman Pfluger should tell the people of West Texas why he voted against the Consumer Fuel Price Gouging Prevention Act, or why he voted against capping the insulin bill West Texas seniors have to pay every month, as was included in the Inflation Reduction Act. MCSO fires deputy charged with aggravated assault by public servant, by Mercedes Cordero. A Midland County Sheriff's Office deputy was terminated Thursday following a use of force incident that occurred on September 13th, according to the county spokesperson. The MCSO conducted an administrative investigation into the incident involving Juan Alcaraz, 32, after learning about it. The investigation was referred to the Texas Rangers to conduct a criminal investigation and found that Alcaraz's use of force was not justified. Alcaraz has been charged with aggravated assault by a public servant. Details surrounding the incident were not released. Sheriff David Kreiner released the following statement. The Midland County Sheriff's Office learned about a use of force incident that took place earlier this week. I want to assure the community that MCSO was committed to making sure that an internal review of the incident took place. Immediately after becoming aware of the incident through the standard protocol that is followed when any use of force is used by an MCSO officer, an administrative review began. Based on that review, it was referred to the Texas Rangers for criminal investigation. The deputy was terminated. This incident does not represent our core values as an organization. We hold ourselves to a higher standard. We are committed to the prevention of crime and the protection of life and property. This investigation is still ongoing, so no further details are available at this time. MCT offers Pay What You Can show by Morgan Taylor Thomas. After attending A Funny Thing Happened on the Way to the Forum last weekend, I immediately became intrigued with the passion and comedic talent of the cast. The banter between main hitters Pseudolus and Nicholas McRae and Hysterium, Josh Rapp, provide a driving beat to the musical, while stunning vocals from highly praised Philia, Caroline Booth, resonate throughout the Maybe Theater 2 Square. The ironic false confidence of lady owner Lysis, Michael Fields, and absurd love triangle between hero, Garrig Cortez, and his father, Scenics, David Thomas, keep audiences snickering and engaged at every turn. The ending? Something I don't think anyone saw coming. So what better way than to fill the Sunday afternoon blues than by enjoying this amusing creation, and at a price you see fit? We started the Pay What You Can event several years ago in cooperation with Abel Hanger Foundation in order to reach people who might not yet know us or who might not otherwise be able to come to the theater. Wendy Guerrero, Midland Community Theater's Public Relations Director, told the MRT. In tradition of keeping the theater available and welcoming to all Midlanders, A Funny Thing Happened on the Way to the Forum will run as the Pay What You Can showing at 2:30 p.m. Sunday. The minimum price for a ticket will be $1. The maximum lies within the buyer. If we have open seats, we go ahead and sell them at the door, Guerrero said. Then, once we max out, we go into the theater prior to starting and look for no-shows, which often happens. At a glance, Pay What You Can showing of A Funny Thing Happened on the Way to the Forum, Midland Community Theater, 2:30 p.m. Sunday, Maybe Theater 2, at least $1. Concessions will run at regular pricing. The theater doors open at 1:30 p.m. Seating begins at 2 p.m. Online, mctmidland.org. Obituaries and death notice from the Midland Reporter-Telegram. Dixie Ruth Miller Gifford was born in Hallettsville, Texas. She went to be with the Lord September 13, 2022. She is survived by her son Larry Gifford of Midland, 7 grandchildren, 12 great-grandchildren, and 5 great-great-grandchildren. Services were held at Ellis Funeral Home on Wednesday. Scott Lee Orson, 55, of Midland, passed away on Tuesday, September 20th. Interment will be Saturday, September 24th at 1 p.m. at Rest Haven Memorial Park, followed by a celebration of life at 2 p.m. at Nellie Picklin Welch Funeral Home Chapel. A reception will then proceed at the branch at NPW. Scott Orson was born on October 17, 1966, in Andrews to Liz and Rick Orson. Scott is survived by his parents, children Jared, Audrey, and Logan Orson, wife Catherine Orson, stepchildren Ace Britton, Caitlin Moorhead, Jordan Watkins, one brother Eric Orson, two sisters Allison Becken and Ricky Dorian, grandmother Mrs. Frances Orson, two grandchildren. Memorial donations may be made to the Springboard Center and Thriving United of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. William Moore, 84, of Midland, passed away September 19th. Interment will be held Saturday, November 5th at Rest Haven Memorial Park. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com.
This is Reed, and this is the Odessa American for Friday, September 23rd, 2022. Student accused in stabbing still in custody. An Odessa high school sophomore accused of stabbing a fellow student Wednesday will remain in the Ector County Youth Center for at least another 10 days. As will a Bowie middle school student accused of attacking one of his teachers over the seizure of his cell phone. Ector County Court at Law Judge Brooke Hendricks, during a Thursday hearing, found there was probable cause to believe the teenager committed aggravated assault with a deadly weapon. Ector County District Attorney Dusty Gallivan asked for the boy to remain in custody not only because of his alleged conduct, but because he made statements to detention officers that were of some concern. Gallivan said staff from Permia Care, which provides mental health services, will continue to monitor the teenager while he's in custody. Youths incarcerated in the youth center are entitled to detention hearings every 10 days. According to Ector County Independent School District officials, the boy and another student agreed to fight each other, but it ended when one of them was stabbed. Officials described the student's injuries as, quote, minor, end quote. Also on Thursday, the Bowie Middle School student who was recorded attacking a teacher September 7th waived his right to his first 10-day detention hearing, said Kevin Mann, director of juvenile services. The boy was arrested on suspicion of aggravated assault of a public servant. The video shows the student touching the teacher while trying to get the phone out of her desk, her pushing him away, and then him taking her to the ground and beating her. At one point, her head can be heard banging against a desk. The teacher has not yet returned to work. Mann said Hendricks also ordered two Nimitz students to remain in custody Thursday. On Wednesday, an 11-year-old sixth grader at Nimitz told one of his friends he planned to shoot up the school Thursday, resulting in the boy being arrested on suspicion of threat or exhibition of a weapon on school or bus grounds, a Class A misdemeanor. His arrest came one day after a 13-year-old eighth grader at Nimitz was arrested for allegedly threatening to shoot a teacher who stepped in between him and another student while they were arguing. According to ECISD officials, the boy did not have a weapon. He was arrested on suspicion of exhibition, use or threat of exhibition, or use of a firearm, a Class A misdemeanor. An Ireland Elementary student, who was also arrested Wednesday, was not booked into the facility, but is still facing a charge of threat or exhibition of a weapon on school or bus grounds, Mann said. That student is 10 years old. ECISD has been dealing with a spate of student arrests. On August 24th, authorities said an OHS student was arrested after inflicting a non-life-threatening wound on a fellow student, and 2 days later, a Primian student was arrested for bringing a gun on campus. ECISD Police Chief Todd Heiner said Thursday the case stemming from the August 24th incident was, quote, inactivated due to insufficient evidence, end quote, and was not sent to the Juvenile Probation Department as a result. The Permian student arrested August 26th remains in the youth center. He waived his September 15th detention hearing. On Wednesday, ECISD released the following statement. Quote, school and school district leaders are once again calling on parents to help with these situations. Parents and school staff together must make sure students understand that fighting and violence are not the way to settle differences. And this type of behavior can have long-term consequences in the form of discipline or criminal charges. School must be a safe place for students to learn, and that will happen when all of us are working together to teach kids to handle conflict and deal with each other without violence. End quote. Honoring Excellence. Beacon Awards recognizes nonprofits, volunteers. Midland. For 14 years, the Nonprofit Management Center has recognized different organizations and volunteers around the Permian Basin with its Beacon Awards. This year's award ceremony took place Thursday at the Petroleum Club at Midland. Numerous awards were given out to volunteers and nonprofit organizations from both Ector and Midland counties. Quote, we're thrilled to be able to honor excellence in nonprofit work, end quote, Executive Director of the Nonprofit Management Center, Lori Johnson, said. Quote, we have a great group of honorees this year, end quote. The awards included the Judge Pat Baskin Family Volunteer, which includes an Adult and Youth of the Year, the W.D. Noel Volunteer of the Year, the Beacon Awards for Excellence in Collaboration, Excellence in Communication, Program Excellence, Excellence in Organization Leadership, Excellence in Governing Board Leadership, and the Outstanding Generations Graduate. Quote, with these honorees, you look at them and you see the work they've done, and it's not just unique to these organizations that are receiving these awards today, end quote, Johnson said. Quote, you can take it and multiply it by hundreds of nonprofits and hundreds of volunteers who make the Permian Basin such a great place to live because they improve the quality of life every day, end quote. The Judge Pat Baskin Family Volunteer of the Year Award winner in the adult division was Shane Bell from the American Red Cross. He serves in various leadership roles for the American Red Cross, from the local to national level, including helping out in Kentucky last December following the tornadoes that brought destruction in that state. The Judge Pat Baskin Family Volunteer of the Year Award in the youth category was Cody Munoz from Midland Teen Court. A junior at Midland Classical Academy, Munoz has served as a teen attorney for over 4 years. The W.D. Noel Volunteer of the Year was Debbie McReynolds from Ector County Independent School District, where she has been instrumental in training volunteers and teachers at other schools and facilitating ECISD's Shark Finder program at Hayes STEAM Academy. Dowling, Johnson, and Gale Pond Alamo Elementary Schools. The Excellence in Collaboration Award was given to Bynum School, Midland Children's Rehabilitation Center, Spectrum of Solutions, who formed We Are the World. We Are the World is an adaptive daycare for children with disabilities. Excellence in Communication went to the Permian Basin Big Brothers Big Sisters. Program Excellence went to Odessa Arts. Excellence in Organizational Leadership was awarded to David Diaz, who is with Midland's Community Development and has served on the boards of numerous organizations in Midland. West Texas Jazz Society Board President Eric Baker was awarded the Excellence in Governing Board Leadership. Quote, it's very humbling, end quote, Baker said of the award. Quote, it's an honor to get this award. It was a nice surprise. I couldn't do what I do without the support of the board of directors for the Jazz Society. They're all very hardworking people, and they deserve this just as much as me, end quote. The West Texas Jazz Society runs the longest-running jazz party in the world, which takes place each year in Odessa. Quote, it may sound cliche, but we stand on the shoulders of all the people who came before us, end quote, Baker said. Quote, without the people who have led the Jazz Society before us, we wouldn't be here today. So I'm honored to continue with their legacy, end quote. Philip Knight was awarded for the Outstanding Generation Graduate. He currently sits on the Midland Children's Rehabilitation Center Endowment Board, as well as being the treasurer for the High Sky Children's Ranch and is the president of the Cameron Stotts Foundation. Misty Clary is the chair for this year's Beacon Award Committee. Quote, I think the Beacon Awards in general gives us a chance to recognize people within the community that have really given so much of their time and talent and efforts to everybody, end quote, Clary said. Quote, it goes to the heart of our community. The Beacon Awards and all our nominees, including the recipients that won, they show the best of our nonprofits. Our community has a lot of heart, and these are some of the best of putting that heart into action, end quote. President of the Nonprofit Management Center, Diane Williams, talked about how the nominations are selected for the Beacon Awards. Quote, the nominations are presented by any nonprofit organization, and they are judged by a panel of judges for each award, and there are usually 3 to 4 different judges per award, end quote, Williams said. Quote, they have a certain set of criteria that meets that particular type of award, whether it's leadership or collaboration, end quote. CRSF PSP celebrate grand opening of STEM centers. A Thursday press release detailed the Cal Ripken Senior Foundation is celebrating its partnership with the Permian Strategic Partnership and the launch of a five-year, $7.5 million investment that will provide 134 new STEM centers for every elementary school in the Permian Basin. The event will take place from 8:30 a.m. to 9:30 a.m. September 30th at Pease Elementary School, located at 1800 West 22nd Street. This will focus on a ribbon-cutting ceremony with guest speakers including Baseball Hall of Famer and CRSF co-founder Cal Ripken Jr. and Steve Salem, President and CEO of CRSF. Other guest speakers include the President and CEO of PSP, Tracy Bentley, Superintendent of Ector County Independent School District, Dr. Scott Murray, and Principal of Pease Elementary School, Micah Arrett. Following the celebration, students of Pease Elementary School will have the opportunity to explore and engage with the school's STEM Center for the first time. This STEM Center is one of 134 to be installed over the next 5 years, and one of 50 to be installed in 2022. Through the partnership between the Cal Ripken Senior Foundation and PSP that was announced earlier this year, which will reach over 60,000 students and 2,000 teachers in 22 counties. Bentley stated to the Odessa American, quote, "We are incredibly proud of our partnership with the Cal Ripken Senior Foundation and the positive impact the Pease Elementary STEM Center will have on our community. These centers will provide students with the opportunity to explore STEM concepts and fields and develop important critical thinking skills. We believe that an investment in education is an investment in our future workforce. This new center will inspire students to pursue careers in STEM and help us build a better future for the Permian Basin. We are so excited to see what our students can achieve." End quote.
Hello, this is Cindy. I'm continuing to read from the Odessa American for Friday, September 23rd. B&N customers will receive a free coffee and iced tea with purchase. In honor of National Coffee Day, Barnes & Noble is celebrating by giving customers a free tall, hot, or iced coffee with the purchase of any baked item from B&N cafes nationwide, September 29th. The free tall, hot, or iced coffee is limited to one cup per transaction. The cafes will be sharing the buzz on Thursday on Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, and Twitter. Environmental enforcement hosting free bulky item drop-off. In an effort to eliminate the illegal dumping in Ector County, the Ector County Environmental Enforcement Unit announced on Tuesday that it will be providing a free bulky item drop-off for residents of Ector County from 8 a.m. to noon on Saturday. The location of the drop-off will be at the 16261 South U.S. Highway 385, which is the northeast corner at South 385 and Farm to Market 1787 in South Ector County. Many of the items that are illegally dumped in Ector County are mattresses and discarded furniture. This is an opportunity to dispose of these items. All loads will be inspected at the gate to ensure we will be able to accept them. The following items won't be accepted: any type of oils and oil filters, car batteries, household and commercial hazardous waste, masonry debris such as tile, brick, rocks, etc., paints, remodeling demolition, refrigerators, tree limbs, any waste from commercial businesses, small trash that will fit in your residential trash container. Permian Basin Rehab Center to have Great American Stakeout Fundraiser by Michael Bauer. The Permian Basin Rehab Center is gearing up for the first full-blown Great American Stakeout fundraiser in 3 years at 6 p.m. September 29th at La Hacienda Event Center. For most of the past 28 years, top cook-off teams have fired up their grills to bring people an incredible steak dinner, complete with all the trimmings, and to support the center. "We are so excited," Permian Basin Rehab Center Director of Development Shannon Adams said. "This is a big fundraiser, but it's a lot of fun because it gives us the opportunity to not only raise money to benefit the patients here at the center, but it also gives us the chance to celebrate and have a good time with our donors that are so supportive of the center." Adams says this will be the first full event to take place since before COVID. In 2020, the event was canceled, and last year was a smaller event due to maintaining social distancing. This year, we're able to go back to our full-blown format of having all of our guests, Adam said. We have about 18 cooking teams. Right now, we're expecting between guests and volunteers, I'm expecting 1,000 people. It's just a lot of fun. We're excited. The Permian Basin Rehab Center helps patients with physical, speech, and occupational therapy and audiology services. Funds raised at this year's event will support the PBRC sponsorship programs that benefits the patients. We have a goal, Adam said, about how much they hope to raise. We set a goal each year, but really we just want to raise as much as possible. The more we raise, the more therapy sessions we can offer our patients here in the Permian Basin. Guests will get to enjoy steak dinners, participate in live and silent auctions, and listen to live music by Tom Yankton. The 18 grilling teams will compete for bragging rights as they cook donated by Bobby and Leona Cox from Rose's Cafe. The expectation is that they help us grill all the steaks, Adams said. They also have the opportunity to prepare an appetizer. The steaks go before a judging committee, and we have trophies for first, second, and third places. If they want to do an appetizer and send it before the judges, they can do that as well. We also offer first, second, and third place for that as well. Bobby Cox Companies with Rose's Cafe, they donate all of our steaks, and then Barn Door provides sides, and La Margarita provides appetizers. Adam says there are no criteria for the cooks. We're just looking for volunteers that are willing to come and help make the event a success, Adams said. Without Rose's or Bobby Cox's company, we would not be able to pull this off for 1,000 people. The criteria is just groups that want to come and help that have a heart for helping patients and children here at the therapy center and want to have a good time with this. One of the grillers coming back this year is GemStar president Kevin Gray. He will be taking part in this event for the fourth year with a couple of friends. Really, just cooking is our favorite thing, Gray said. Being around the other cooks, it's really nice to be around the public and be able to talk. There were a couple of years during COVID where we weren't sure if we were going to do it or not. Now that we're past that, it's nice to interact with everyone again. Last year, Gray's team tied for first place for the best steak. The two previous occasions, he said, they took first for the appetizers. Gray is hopeful about his team protecting their title this year. He spends a lot of time grilling in Lubbock before Texas Tech football games. It's great, Gray said. It's a good deal. We really enjoy it. I do a lot of tailgating at Texas Tech games. I travel back and forth and bring a trailer. It's just fun. I love to do the cooking. I have a partner who helps me, Coy Stribling. Ivan Williams helps us too. We do different things. We all enjoy the cooking part of that deal, and that's why we come out. Members of the UTPB football team and cheer squads will also be present at the event and help out. It's an honor for us to be included, UTPB head football coach Justin Kerrigan said. We've helped serve in any way possible for the last eight years. Our guys have a great time participating and hosting and visiting the guests as they come in. It serves a tremendous cause. It's an honor to be a part of it. If you go, Permian Basin Rehab Center's Great American Stakeout, 6 p.m. September 29th, La Hacienda Event Center. Murray, Mental Health Issues, Root of Violence by Ruth Campbell. A string of incidents at Ector County ISD schools has prompted concerns about rising violence and causes of it. Superintendent Scott Murray said the stabbings, threats, and fights are due to a variety of factors, and he observed that some students are continuing to struggle with mental health issues that comes out in the form of violent behavior. During his media call Wednesday, Murray said it's only about 1% of students that handle their issues with violence, but they're the ones that get most attention. Other students may deal with social-emotional issues by secluding themselves from their friends or in the way they joke or make fun of people. The pandemic and other situations in society today have created an environment where children continue to struggle with their thoughts and feelings, he said. We have one group of students that can display violent behaviors, and I would like to address that today, Murray said. Wednesday. As adults, we know that violence is not the way to solve problems. We as human beings are equipped with intelligent minds. We use our mouths, we use our words to solve the conflicts that we have with others. One of the responsibilities we have as adults is to share that knowledge and information with our children. It is our responsibility to make sure that our kids are well equipped to handle conflicts when they arise in their life. And again, our responsibility is to use our words, he added. As a school system, one of the things they do at all levels is equip students with strategies they can use should they get into a conflict or disagreement with someone. ECISD also provides consequences when students choose to misbehave or use violent actions, Murray said. We have a very explicit set of rules and consequences that we provide for those children. Today, we need the help of our parents and our guardians. Those other adults that are involved in the lives of our children as our kids continue to display violent behaviors at every level. It's something that we must address as a community, as a society, and certainly as a school system, he added. The district's commitment to students is to continue to inform them and educate them on the appropriate ways to deal with their behaviors, but also to provide structure, rules, and consequences should they choose to behave, Murray said. We ask that our parents remind children of appropriate behavioral expectations. When your child gets into a conflict with another student, remind them to use their words to solve their problems and not resort to violence. Violent behavior can have long-lasting consequences for our students, and we need to remind them of that, Murray said. Choosing to exercise violence, whether in the community or in our schools, once again, can result in long-term consequences that can have dire effects on our children. The responsibility for adults is to ensure that children know how to behave appropriately should they be involved in a situation in which they feel uncomfortable or confronted. Again, as human beings, our words are the greatest strategy to deal with conflict should it choose to arise. ECISD will continue to work with our families and with members of our community to help inform our kids and to encourage them to behave in appropriate ways. But we will also continue to provide rigid structures and processes and systems to ensure that our kids are compliant with the rules and procedures we have in place. Our goal is to make sure all our students have a healthy academic experience every single day in each campus, elementary, middle school, and high school, within our environment, Murray said. If parents are struggling with their children and need some assistance, Murray encourages them to contact ECISD. We've seen that escalate across the country right now, and we as a society have to get a handle on that, he said. For teachers that are having difficulty, Murray said counselors are available through the district's insurance program. Asked about the status of the teacher from Bowie Middle School who had a student attack her over a cell phone and whether the student would be coming back to school, Murray said he couldn't comment about that either. He said parents are involved immediately when a child commits a criminal offense at school. Law enforcement officers are involved, so there is a legal side of this when police are involved. That is separate and apart from the school district, but when there are legal consequences involved, certain children can be arrested. There are charges filed, and they go through the legal system, Murray said. When I talk about the long-term consequences, those are the types of consequences in which we must inform and remind our children when we break the law. Consequences can be long-lasting, he added. From a school district perspective, when a child violates the code of conduct, the district takes action. Our code of conduct is available. It's online. It's available to all our families. Every family gets a copy that we follow the rules based upon the behavior of the child. We apply the appropriate consequence to that particular child and parents or guardians. Whoever is responsible for the child, we make those connections immediately. If a child commits a crime or has an egregious violation of the student code of conduct, parents are always engaged in that process to fully understand what has happened to their particular child and then what their responsibilities are as a parent, he said. He added that less than 1% of students act out. You know, 99% of our kids come to school every day, and they do what they're supposed to do. I think as a school system and as a member of this community, and really as a society, we must keep in mind that the vast majority of adults in society and the vast majority of children do exactly what they are supposed to do. They are well behaved every single day. It is the anomaly, it is the one or two that misbehave, unfortunately, that get a great deal of attention, Murray said. But because we've seen a rise in violent behaviors, we want to make sure that not only do we have conversations with all of our students, but that our parents and guardians are having those same conversations at home, and that hopefully together between what kids are hearing from us and what they're hearing from parents, we can get that less than 1% under control, he added. Murray said they aren't seeing a common motive in the incidents that have occurred. It's kid relationships. It is a student, if you will, losing their temper, getting angry, and then resorting to violent behavior. And it's the violence that has to stop, he said. We all become angry. That is a normal, natural human reaction, is to become angry. It's what we choose to do with that anger that we have to help our kids know and understand. When you become angry with somebody, what is the right way to respond? Murray said he believes that the district has in place is working. We are seeing more of it, more violent behaviors across our country and across our state. Our children are asking for more help, and so our responsibility, we're going to elevate, if you will, the amount of help that we're providing. Do we need more counselors? Do we need more social-emotional support? Do we need more guidance? What specific actions must we take, because we have to provide the kind of support that our kids need? It's just the number of incidents is increasing, and again, we see that in society. Adult incidents are on the rise as well, and what is our response as a society to that? So yes, we have to make some change because we're seeing more violence, he said. Murray said ECISD has talked to some other organizations in the community, such as mental health professionals and law enforcement agencies, about how they can work together to help solve these issues. I commend our law enforcement agencies, ECISD Police, the Odessa Police, the Sheriff's Department. There is a very healthy relationship between all the law enforcement agencies in our community, and we are fortunate to live in a community in which there is such communication, and we help each other. They share information that helps the community and the school system address issues. We're very appreciative of that. We need to continue to have those same conversations with our mental health community, all the mental health professionals in our community, as we continue to see issues with children and families. That exchange of information is important so that together we can provide solutions, Murray said. He added that the greatest resource is moms, dads, and guardians. They must partner together because when everyone works together, they can provide the right type of support for children. Murray said there are a variety of reasons that children misbehave, but when a child resorts to violent behavior, that is abnormal, he said. That is a mental health issue because that is something that is not normal. It is not normal to resort to violence and solve problems, and certainly that can be created. The home situation can create that, a community situation, a school situation. There are a variety of situations, a variety of things that can drive kids to behaving poorly, but it's our responsibility as adults, again, to be really good role models for our kids and be guides and mentors to them to help them know and understand when you're in a tough situation, what's the appropriate response that you should display, Murray said. Kids have to be taught that. We aren't born knowing that. These are things that we learn throughout our life. 2022 Walk to End Alzheimer's Set. Odessa, Midland, and Permian Basin residents will join in the Walk to End Alzheimer's October 15th. The event opens at 9 a.m. The opening ceremony is at 10 a.m., and the walk begins at 10:30 a.m. at Cimarex Pavilion, 5514 Champions Drive in Midland. On Walk Day, participants honor those affected by Alzheimer's with the Poignant Promise Garden Ceremony, a mission-focused experience that signifies our solidarity in the fight against the disease. The colors of the Promise Garden flowers represent people's connection to Alzheimer's. their personal reasons to end the disease. While plans are moving forward to host the Permian Basin Walk in person, the health and safety of participants, staff, and volunteers remain the top priorities. The Alzheimer's Association will continue to closely monitor CDC, state, and local guidelines to ensure walk events adhere to the latest recommendations. Men arrested on game room violations. An Ector County game room general manager is facing a misdemeanor charge after deputies discovered his game room was operating with too many machines. According to an Ector County Sheriff's Office report, a sergeant found 57 machines in operation when she walked into the Happy Star game room, 4718 Andrews Highway, on March 3rd. According to county statutes, game rooms are only allowed to have a maximum of 50 machines. The manager told the sergeant, the general manager, Su Jin Tao, also told her to stay open until 2 a.m., although the county's ordinance states closing time is midnight every night, but Sunday. The sergeant asked the manager to unplug machines, and she closed the business because of the violations. The sergeant removed the game room permit and tax permit from the wall. Tao was arrested Wednesday on suspicion of operating a game room with 57 machines and operating past hours. He was released the same day after posting a $2,000 surety bond. Death notices from the Odessa American for Friday. Robert Edward Robbie Desjardins III, 25, of Midland, died Monday, September 19th in Buda, Texas. Funeral service will be held at 2 p.m. September 26th at Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home Chapel. Burial will follow at Rest Haven Cemetery. The family will receive friends on Sunday, September 25th from 4 p.m. to 6 p.m. at Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home. Maria Guadalupe Miranda Orozco, 51, of Odessa, died Monday, September 19th in Odessa. Mass will be celebrated at 2 p.m. Friday, September 23rd at St. Joseph Catholic Church of Odessa. Burial follows at Monahans Memorial Cemetery. Arrangements are by Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa. Daniel Keith Danny Windham, 61, of Odessa, died Wednesday, September 21st in Odessa. No services have been scheduled. Arrangements are by Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa. Ticket, weekend entertainment guide for the Permian Basin. Let There Be Blood. Don't miss Odessa College's performance of Dracula, October 28th, 29th, and November 4th at the Globe Theater. Comedian Seinfeld, American's premier comedian Jerry Seinfeld, will return to the Odessa Midland area on October 15th at the Wagner Knoll Performing Arts Center. The King of Queens. Comedian and actor Kevin James will be cracking wise in the Permian Basin at 7 p.m. September 30th at the Wagner Knoll Performing Arts Center. Fall is here. Fiddlesticks Farms marks arrival of season with opening by Michael Bauer, Midland. One of the main fall attractions in the Permian Basin is returning after a 15th season. Fiddlestick Farms, run by farmers Jessica and Matt Norton, will open up this weekend, and it's no coincidence that it returns the first week of the beginning of fall. Fiddlestick Farms, 5610 East County Road in Midland, opens Saturday and is scheduled to remain open each weekend until November 19th. Each year, Fiddlestick Farms usually adds something new. Jessica Norton says that this year's concessions at the farm will be expanded. Last year, we expanded our courtyard so we can have more room, Norton said. In that courtyard, we put in a new building called the South 40, where we are serving concession food. The majority of our food will be over there. We also will be selling HTOT out there. We have turned one of our buildings that we had existing on our farm into a bakery called the Cookie Coop. We have added a couple of structures to the farm. As far as attractions, we haven't changed or really added anything from last year, but we have expanded our concessions and our foods for the year. Every year, Fiddlestick Farms brings in families to enjoy the farm's 7-acre corn maze and the 10 acres of pumpkin patch, as well as visiting the farm's animals and other attractions. It's something Jessica and Matt always look forward to each year. It's always very exciting, Jessica said. This is our 15th fall, so we have a lot of new kids that are going to be working for us this year. But we also have a lot of great returning people that we have, so we're very excited to have everyone working and excited to see all the faces coming out for the fall. One attraction is a campfire where family and friends can relax on a crisp fall day at the farm and roast hot dogs and make s'mores. A visit to the Learning Barn lets folks meet the many farm animals, including cows, calves, goats, sheep, and lambs, chickens, pigs, and ducks. A candy blaster takes place at 1:30 and 6:30 p.m. each Saturday and 5:30 p.m. Sundays in September and October. The candy blaster takes place at 5:30 p.m. Saturdays in November. Fireworks are scheduled at 9 p.m. every Saturday in October. Hay rides will also be offered throughout the season. One popular attraction at the farm includes the tater sack slide. The kids love the yellow slide whenever they're out there, Jessica said. The parents not so much because they don't want to have to keep walking all the way up the stairs again, but the kids love the yellow slide. The Learning Barn is probably the most popular by everyone, and the flowers were new addition last year, and they were a big hit with our customers. Lots of preparation goes into getting the farm ready for each season. The heavy rainfall that came across the Permian Basin at the end of August did affect the preparation just a little bit. It was much needed, but it was the wrong time, Jessica said. We needed it a little bit earlier in July to get a better stand on the corn maize and the pumpkins and the flowers that we planted. But everything started growing after we got that rain, so we were able to have everything germinate. Everything just seems like it's a week late. The maize is still growing. It will continue to grow until it freezes. Even though it was short at the beginning of the season, it will still keep growing until we get it freeze. Same thing with the flowers. Those sunflowers, I saw a couple of the blooms starting to open, but not as many as will be open in a couple of weeks. The pumpkins are doing great. We have staggered them, so we'll have pumpkins all throughout the year. We always do, but we staggered them a little bit better, so that we have some larger ones now instead of all bigger ones later at the end of the year. Fiddlestick Farms is still growing and germinating itself. We have always tried to listen to what our customers have requested in the past, Jessica said. We found the need for the concessions to be expanded, and we have tried working on that. After we are able to recoup from the costs of the new concessions, maybe we can add a new attraction next year. We try to add something new each year and make changes where needed each year. This year, Fiddlestick Farms will have about 100 employees working, 10 that are full-time, which is a little bit lower this year. Usually we have about 120 that are part-time and have 15 full-time. But just like everywhere across the Permian Basin and the country, everyone is short-staffed, Jessica said. Nobody wants to work, so what we're doing is trying to make sure the places where employees are needed are there. We've always prided ourselves on customer service. We want to make sure there's people around to help if needed. If you go, Fiddlestick Farms every weekend until November 19th, 5610 East County Road in Midland.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.